You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrts.
Thank you for joining us. I am Lindsay Ehrts, your new host of Inside Utah Politics. And let's go Inside Utah Politics. Of course, this week, week one of the Utah legislative session, so much to get into. Before we talk to one of the state's top Senate leaders, I actually had a chance to sit with Governor Spencer Cox this week, who had a lot of things to say about some of the proposals he would pass and some he won't. It's so good to be with you. First of all, this is the inaugural Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrts. So how do you feel about being the very first guest?
Well, I'm honored to be the first guest. We'll enter the history books with this one. Congratulations. It's really important that we have a strong local media, and that's true of all of our outlets. And so I'm really grateful that you're doing this.
Thank you. I'm sure we'll look back on this and be like, oh, that shouldn't have been the first episode.
Okay. We'll both work our way through
it. There we go. Let's dive in. Let's start with elections, shall we? Yesterday, I heard that the Speaker of the House kind of wants to introduce checking IDs along the election process. Where do you believe that should happen, and do you support that idea?
Sure. Look, we value security. That's really important. We want to make voting as easy as possible and as safe as possible, and that's the balance we're always trying to reckon with, trying to figure out. And so, obviously, when you're registering to vote, you need to show ID. You need to be a U.S. citizen. You need to be a citizen of Utah. You have to go through all those checkpoints, and then we have to have enough of a check along the way to make sure that people who shouldn't vote aren't voting. And that's what we're always trying to do. We always have. So vote by mail is not something new. It's something we did forever. If you were going to be out of town, you could go and register to vote by mail. It's something that we made available to everyone. It's been very popular. It's been very good for Republicans. It was the Republican Party that pushed this more so than Democrats early on. And so, look, we'll work through it. If there are problems, I want to solve those problems. And whatever it takes to do that, we're interested.
So one of the proposals has been mail everyone a ballot, but then drop off your ballot and show an ID. Do you support that?
Well, that doesn't seem to make it much sense. If you're going to do that, why even have vote by mail, right? If everybody has to go and do it every single time. And so again, I think we can find ways to keep elections secure and make them easier for people to cast their ballot. There have been some real positives from vote by mail. We've seen voter turnout increase. We used to be in the bottom five states in the nation for voter turnout, and we've made it into the top 10 a few times, which is really good and really healthy. So can we do both of those things? I think we can.
One of the issues we saw in the primary, in the general election, was the postmarking issue, right? Yeah. We had some ballots that had to go to Vegas, didn't get back in time, couldn't be counted because of the postmarking issue. How do you see the solution for that?
Yeah, so this is one of the areas where I am very concerned and where I think there is a lack of trust in elections, and that is how long it takes us to count ballots on election night. I do think it's a mistake that it takes 2 weeks to figure out how many of these races turn out. Now, it's always been the case that we have one or two, but not the majority of them. And so we should, by 10 o'clock or midnight at least on election night, we should know who won most of these races. And I think that would help increase trust. And so I am supportive of shortening the window to get those ballots mailed back in so that they're in time earlier. And then if you mail it late, you have a chance to fix it, to go in and actually fix it in person. I think that would solve a lot of the issues that we're dealing with.
So do we think that will be the ultimate solution?
Well, I hope so. Again, yeah. That's I don't get to make all the decisions upstairs. There's 104 people up there who do their own thing. And so we'll work closely with them and try to get to a better outcome.
And the oversight over elections, another thing lawmakers are kind of pushing. I spoke with Representative Ryan Wilcox on Friday. He told me his latest version of his bill would be to have county clerks appointed by you and a consortium of the top state leaders pick those five county clerks, then the county clerks pick an executive director of elections. So do you support the idea of taking power away from your administration's office over elections?
Well, look, so it's been the purview of the lieutenant governor. I do support having a way to wall off someone who's running for office, a lieutenant governor. We tried to do that. We didn't have the legal authority to do it, but we made an appointment who could then make recommendations. I would love putting something like that in statute to just increase, again, the confidence that people have in elections. Whatever that thing is seems very convoluted and doesn't make any sense to me. By the way, I remind people, the lieutenant governor doesn't count a single ballot. That is all done by county clerks. And by the way, all 29 county clerks count ballots in their own races. So that would seem to be a lot more of a conflict than anything else we're talking about here. I don't have any interest in whatever that was.
Do you think this is a political attack on Deidre Henderson?
Oh, I don't think so. I think everybody's just trying to do their very best, and I appreciate people that are working to find new ideas. That's what this process is about. We float new ideas out there, we see if there's support for them, and then we move forward.
Let's switch to taxes, shall we? You are pushing for an income tax cut on Social Security. Yeah. Benefits for Utah's elderly population. $165 million been set aside by the legislature for those tax cuts. How sure are you that you're going to get your way?
Well, I'm not sure. Again, governors don't get to get their way every time. It's up to the legislature and what they pass. I can tell you it would be very good for them to take this idea and run with it. We're one of only 8 states that taxes Social Security tax, and President Trump now is talking about getting rid of taxing Social Security as well. And so it would be really embarrassing for the state if at the end of the day the federal government does it, almost all the states do it, and we're one of the few who doesn't. I can also tell you it's incredibly popular, not just with seniors who are going to get, 150,000 Utahns are going to get between $900 and $1,000 tax cut this year. It's popular with younger people who have a grandma or a parent, and all of us hopefully will be old someday. So it's good for all of us, and I think it's an easy win for them. I've kind of delivered them an easy political win, and I hope they take it.
Broadly, though, we are considering another income tax cut. Sure. Talk to me about the purpose of that. Is it necessary for another even marginal income tax cut for Utahns?
Yeah, well, I think it's always good to have tax cuts. I'm a big believer in letting the people of Utah have more of their money and spend more of their money, especially where we've seen rising prices, inflation has been an issue. And so I'm always trying to balance the needs of government, and we have to have a tax structure of some sort, and helping Utahns have more of their tax dollars. So I'm always supportive of more tax cuts. That's where we can make them happen.
As we continue to bring the income tax lower and lower, though, eventually that gets to zero.
That's right. Yeah.
Income tax also funds education.
Sure.
How do we fund education if our income tax is at zero? And yeah, also, likewise, would our sales tax go up? How do we make up that difference?
Yeah, so this is the question, and this is what I keep positing to legislative leadership and to the legislature. I'm willing to take the income tax down to zero. I would love to see that happen, but what are we going to replace it with? And no one has come up with an idea there. I always hear, we need to be more like Texas. And I say, okay, Texas doesn't have an income tax, you're right. The property tax in Texas is 3 times higher. So what are you paying on your house right now? $1,400 a year? How would you like that to be $5,000 or $6,000 a year, because that's what it would be in Texas. Are we going to significantly increase sales taxes as you see in some other states? We need to have that conversation and decide what do we want our tax structure to look like. And that's not happening, and so that's the caution I keep giving the legislature. I'm willing to engage, but we have to come up with some ideas.
So do you put your foot down and say, no, this is not the year, budgets are a little bit tight, maybe we should pause this year and not do this and kind of have that conversation?
Well, again, that's what we do have some money set aside for a tax cut. This was money that was set aside for the food tax cut that didn't happen because that didn't end up on the ballot. And so we might as well, we've already budgeted for it, we might as well take it this year.
Let's switch to a topic that was brought up a lot around the time Amendments A and D got voided from the ballot, and that is judicial reforms. What do you support in terms of judicial reforms?
Well, look, when it comes to the judiciary, I think we have the best judiciary in the country. That doesn't mean that it can't improve. I do have some concerns about delay in justice and how long it is taking for cases to be decided. And if justice delayed is justice that just isn't served. And so we want, you have a right to a speedy trial. We have a right to be able to move these things along. I would like to look for ways to make our judiciary more efficient. Now, they've done some things that I disagree with, but that's the Constitution, right? We have a separation of power for a reason. It's important that we have an executive branch that holds the legislature in check, a legislature that holds the executive branch and the judiciary in check, and a judiciary that holds us both in check. We do those things. So we'll look at what comes out of there, but I'm not interested in kind of major changes to make our judiciary look more like other states where they have far more problems than we have.
So if the legislature goes too far to elect judges and or they pack the court or expand it, you support that?
Yeah, so I would, you know, I haven't heard about expanding the court. That's something I would look at. If that helps improve efficiencies, that's something that I think may be worth looking at. When it comes to electing judges, I would veto that. That would be the fastest veto you've ever seen from me. I think it's terrible. I've seen how it works in other states. I've lived in other states, and it's a disaster, and we should not fall into that trap.
You've told me in the past that you like to get involved in the legislative process early, right?
Yeah.
So you don't have to veto anything. Yeah. Do you still kind of stand by that strategy?
Look, it's so much better. We get better outcomes when we do that. It, again, I don't get everything I want. But if I can help and avoid a veto and make a bill better, everybody wins with that type of system. Look, it would be easy to just veto 50 bills or 100 bills. By the way, most of them would probably get overturned if you did that. As a governor, there's a reason that governors have not done that historically. And I'm not about to start. We care about relationships. We have a great relationship. They listen to me. They take my input. Sometimes I get some things, sometimes I don't, and that's okay. I sign a lot of bills I don't like because we've worked through them, and they, you know, sometimes I need a bill they don't like, and that means signing a bill that I don't like. That's how the process works.
Our time is short, so a quick rapid fire on do you support these or not? The union bill to prevent collective bargaining.
I haven't looked at it. I that's one I need to review.
Pride flags in classrooms.
Look, we should be teaching reading, writing, and arithmetic. I think politics should stay outside of the classroom as much as possible. But also people have freedom of expression, and so I want to be careful and find the right balance there.
Gender-specific dorms and limiting transgender students from being in specific dorms.
Yes, support that.
Requiring golf courses to track their water usage.
We should all be tracking our water usage. I think that's critical.
And requiring ballots to be to the county clerk by election day.
Yeah, again, anything that moves that up, I think, would be very good for us so that we can count those ballots on election day.
And what will you veto this session?
Oh, I don't know. Hopefully nothing, because we got it all right. That's the idea. And if I have no vetoes, it means it was a good session.
Governor, thank you so much. I hope you get some of what you want and a lot more.
I hope so, too. Thank you, Lindsay. Thanks so much.
So that is what the governor would like to see. What does the Senate have to say about that? We're joined by Senate President Stuart Adams next.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrens.
Senate President Stuart Adams, thank you so much for joining us.
It's so great to be with you.
Thank you.
Great to be back.
This is the first episode with me as the new host, so I'm so grateful that you joined me on week one.
Well, it's an honor to be on week one with you. We've got so much to talk about.
We do, and we just wrapped up our interview with the governor, and so he had some thoughts of his own, so I'll ask you about some of the things. One of the major rocks this year is elections that's kind of popping up. We saw a proposal this week that would allow by-mail ballots to get mailed to you, but then it would require you to go back in person to turn those in and show your ID. I know this is a bill coming from the House side, but talk to me how the Senate feels about that.
Well, I think there's consensus in making sure that people can vote easily. In other words, it's convenient for people to vote, that they can, that actually increases voter turnout. But there's also very high consensus on people wanting to be secure. In other words, they don't want people to cheat. And so that's going to be the challenge this session, is to try to make sure we allow voting to be done very easily, but also to make sure it's very secure and that nobody can cheat.
Do you think people are cheating right now with the system we have?
Well, we found a couple last year, not many, but a couple actually who were dead that voted. And so there is that challenge. And we don't want to, our clerks are doing such a good job. We surely don't want them to do subjective things. And I think we need to be careful to make sure that we make it as quantifiable as possible.
And again, I know this bill is coming out of the House, but do you see it getting significant changes before it comes to you? Or do you think you will you broadly support the policy of showing an ID? It's just at what point along the process do we need to show that ID?
Well, every idea that comes out gets better through the process. Even my ideas, which I think are the best, always get better as we take them through the process. And so that's part of the process here, is we're going to start the process and we'll see how it ends up.
This bill also requires you put two administration's workers at drop boxes. Is that something we have state resources for?
You know, I think, those resources were usually done by the counties. And we used to have poll workers all the time. And again, we'll see how it comes out. So, and whether we have those resources or not, or who pays for those resources, I think will be part of the process as we have the bill run.
Let's move on to housing a little bit, okay, because housing affordability is something you've championed in past sessions. You had a bill that provided some funding that Utahns would then have to pay back, a loan per se, that you could put it into home buying. Is that helping with supply?
It's been wildly successful. We had $50 million appropriated. It's almost gone. I think there's $10 or $13 million left. It allowed people to use $20,000 to buy down the rate. Rates went up, and so you can actually buy that down, or you can use it for closing costs or down payment. And think of all the kids that wouldn't have been in a first home that are in one. So it's been wildly successful. We're going to try to continue to allow people to get into a home.
What other housing policies do we need? We always hear that supply is the issue, right? So how do we fix that legislatively?
Well, again, supply is a lot controlled by the municipalities, and we need to work with the cities and counties and towns to make sure that we increase that supply, that we actually allow for the permitting process to happen as efficiently as possible.
Let's switch now to higher education. There was a really interesting discussion this morning, and you probably haven't had time to watch any of it, but there was a really interesting discussion about higher education and some of this reallocation that we want to make in terms of the balance between degrees that maybe aren't as efficient as they could be, maybe not preparing our workforce the way we want to in Utah, but also to balance that we need to kind of create critical thinking students who come out of college. How do you see the state balancing that? Because maybe it's unfair to say you just want to go in with a red pen and cut certain degrees.
Well, I think, again, we need to be as efficient as possible. We only have a limited number of resources. We actually did an audit, and we showed that there were some degrees, I suppose, one language program that was only had two students in it. It was taught in four different universities. That's not very efficient. So then we have a lot of demand. I mean, we need more engineers. We need more nurses. We need more teachers. Everywhere I go, people ask for people to work. And if we have those high-demand jobs, we need to refocus those resources there. And by the way, our education system's doing better than anywhere else in the country. We're rated number two overall, and Weber State and UVU are number one and two for concurrent enrollment. We're $86 million of tuition saved by getting kids in high school on their way to college. It's amazing what we're doing with our education program. We can do better, but the colleges and universities, I think, can actually, as they make that pivot, we'll be able to use those resources better.
A high demand degree, though, doesn't necessarily translate into making money, right? Teachers, for example, yeah. High demand doesn't actually make a lot of money.
Yeah, but what you get out of teaching, and I've talked to a lot of teachers, and we now have some of the highest paid teachers in the Intermountain West, especially for starting salaries. We've done amazing work there. But also, a teacher gets a lot of, self-esteem out of trying to help kids. I know when I help other people, I get it's hard to explain what it is, but it could be an adrenaline rush at making people better. And that's what Utah does best. We're number one for humanitarian aid in the entire country. We do things for other people that maybe other people don't. And we have large classroom sizes, and to be number two in the nation, that we ought to be celebrating those rock stars who are teachers in our state, because they are rock stars.
Are there any majors that you believe need to be cut?
I haven't looked at the ones that will be cut, but I'll tell you what we need. We need more nuclear engineers. We need more nuclear technicians. Hill Air Force Base just announced a nuclear a program going there. We need energy in Utah. We need all types of engineers to do IT work, AI. We need teachers. We need nurses. Yeah, I can tell you what we need, and I'm not going to focus on what we're going to cut. The university presidents can do their job. But we need to take our resources and use them as most efficiently as we possibly can.
On the topic of energy, let's move to that. What is the legislation that needs to be created to help us grow in the energy sector? I know the state has taken the all-of-the-above approach. So what policies help us do that?
Well, there's a couple of things that need to be done. Number one, we have the second lowest, and maybe the first lowest, electric prices in the entire nation. We need to maintain that. In order to maintain it, with the demand that we're having, with these data centers that are coming on, that they're asking for a gig of power, some of them. That's more power than the state of Wyoming uses. So if they come on, we need to make sure, as they come on the grid, that we don't allow them to raise our prices. So they need to increase, if they're going to have the power they need to increase that that electric or the power supply rather than take away from what we use. So that's number one piece of policy that we need to implement. And then number two is, as you see what's going on with critical minerals, you need critical minerals. There are 40 of the 50 critical minerals in the world are found in Utah. We have one nation who has 60% of the critical mineral extraction and 90% of the manufacturing. In America, we're in trouble because they've actually cut us off from three of the critical minerals. We need legislation that allows us to manufacture, mine critical minerals, and allow us to produce power.
This energy conversation, I haven't seen a lot of talk of putting more resources into those renewables. Is that something that may be coming in future sessions or down the road? We've been talking a lot about nuclear, right? And largely we use coal here in Utah, so will that come eventually?
Well, Fervo Energy in Cedar City has one of the nation's largest geothermal plants in the nation. I think they're 300 or 400 megawatts right now. They have the capacity to go to 2 gigawatts. And we have R Plus Energies, I think, that actually have increased their, quadrupled their battery storage for wind and solar. Renewables are part of it. We can't forget coal, that baseload power. We need to continue with that. But we need all the above because we're going to need all the energy we possibly can. We have some of the lowest natural gas prices in the nation, too.
Yeah, and those data centers do take a lot of water, too. I know that you're working on that piece of it, too.
Yeah, and we have data centers that actually come with new technology, salt technology, actually moving away from the swamp cooler type of technology to cool data centers to an AC technology that don't require water.
Let's switch now to possible judicial reforms. Where does the Senate sit on how it wants to reform Utah's judiciary?
Well, we want to make sure that the process is fair. And as we look at initiatives, we're actually referendums or initiatives. We're not opposed to those, but we understand that if somebody's going to legislate, they've got to do it responsibly. So one of the bills coming out this session actually requires that if you're going to run an initiative, you've got to be able to find the funding behind that, so we don't end up with an unbalanced budget or taking away from another source that needs the money. We've got to be able to find the money to be able to fund the initiative as it runs.
Will you move to elect the Utah Supreme Court?
I don't know if that has legs or not. I seriously doubt that we'll move them so they're elected.
Okay, we'll watch for that. Yeah. Lots of conversations, lots to talk about. Senate President Stuart Adams, thanks so much
great,
for joining
great
me.
Great to be with you. Okay,
you
thank you.
My thanks again to Senate President Stuart Adams for sitting with us. Now, coming up, what happened over the last week on Utah's Capitol Hill? We'll recap week one and take a look ahead at what's coming in week two. Welcome back to Inside Utah Politics. I am Lindsay Ertz. Now, week one of the Utah legislature is often a lot of pomp and circumstance, but we are seeing a lot of big ticket items starting to emerge. The governor and Senate president seem to agree that reforms need to happen for both higher education and the judiciary. They may just differ on how to get there. We also know that higher ed is under the microscope. Plus, we know that a tax cut could be coming for you, but the Senate seems a little unsure on how much that could be, and will they give the governor what he wants, which is an income tax cut on Social Security benefits. Plus, we've got to look ahead now at week two. Now, lawmakers are mulling over plans to end daylight saving time in Utah for good, but not everybody is on board. The golf industry, in particular, flagging permanent standard time as a risk for their business. Plus, another set of bills gaining momentum would clear the runway, literally and figuratively, for spaceports and vertiports in Utah, opening the state to aerospace development and futuristic, flying taxis. We can also expect lawmakers to unveil and debate more plans to reform the judiciary and elections after months of rumblings over controversial court rulings and election security. That does it for today's Inside Utah Politics. I am Lindsay Ertz. Thank you for joining us. Now, as always, if you have questions, comments, topics you want to see discussed, you can email us at insideutahpolitics@abc4.com. You can also follow me on our socials, Lindsay on Air, Lindsay spelled with an A, Twitter, Blue Sky, Instagram, wherever you like to social media. And then, of course, this show, we're so excited, is going to become a podcast as well. So wherever you podcast, just search for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz.